the debates are raging on already as to how we should respond, what governments should do across the world. On the military front, on the diplomatic front, on the refugee crisis, we have a Stormont Assembly party calling for tighter border controls, the TUV. Its leader, Jim Allister, joins me now. Morning to you, Jim.
Good morning.
Thanks for waiting. The commentator, Ian Dunt, is with us as well. Morning to you, Ian.
Good morning.
Good morning. Why tighter border controls, Jim?
Well, I think we deceive ourselves if we think that the open borders, which have effectively been operating in southern Europe, are not a contributory factor, and the potential to be an even greater contributory factor what is unfolding, because with great, at times hysterical sympathy, and the sympathy is very understandable, we saw tens of thousands of those classified as refugees pouring into southern Europe. It's quite clear the checks upon them were minimal, and that the attitude of most countries was just get them through our territory and let them be someone else's problem. Well, it doesn't take a genius to work out that an evil organization like ISA is going to exploit and use that situation. Now, it may or may not turn out to be that one of these attackers, in fact, came that route.
Well, we don't know, do we? We don't know.
Well, no, I say it may or may not. At this moment, there's some prima facie evidence that that is so, in that a passport seems to pass through the Greek island where these refugees were coming in. But whether it's this time or the next, I think it's quite clear that that is a route which will have been exploited and used by ISIS, who, of course, are cunning and evil enough to exploit every humanitarian situation to their own advantage. So I think Europe does need to waken up as to what it's doing to itself in terms of its borders, and needs to exercise the restraint and control that you'd expect.
But, Jim, the UK...
sweeping it all aside.
The UK and France have homegrown jihadists, don't they? Some of them have actually travelled to Syria to fight for ISIS. So the idea, Jim, that refugees are a threat, it's a bit of a false trail, is it not?
No, I'm saying within the refugee trail, there is the potential for those who are smuggled in as jihadists. Yes, sadly, within the United Kingdom and certainly within France, there have been, as you call them, homegrown jihadists. But within the United Kingdom, we have relatively effective, certainly not foolproof, but relatively effective intelligence services, and they have been quite successful in being able to contain that situation. It would seem that France may be not so successful, but it's not just a one size solution. It's not just about the border, of course, it's about also containing our intelligence levels within our own country. And all these other countries to counter the homegrown jihadists, but you don't make it easy for them by swinging open the borders of Europe and issuing effectively a free invitation to all and sundry to enter, and then to manifest their evil in whatever way they choose.
Ian Dunt?
There's an awful lot of confusion going on there. I mean, let's address first of all this Syrian passport. So there's absolutely no guarantee that Syrian passport is genuine. It's quite unlikely, really. I mean, these guys, they don't believe in countries. You know, ISIS, the only state that they believe in is their own caliphate. So they don't believe in the distinction between Syria and Iraq. It would be very odd for an ISIS fighter to go out to die one night and carry his Syrian passport with him. So I think the working presumption right now is that that passport, genuine or not, was almost certainly an act of propaganda put there by ISIS to try and make us have precisely the discussion that we are having right now. That is not to say, by the way, that it's impossible that someone would come in through the refugee flow. But there is no immigration solution. There is no border solution whatsoever to stopping terrorism. And anyone that tells you that there is living in some kind of Hollywood action film fairy tale land.
It is possible that anti-immigration parties, though, Ian Dunt, will get a surge out of this.
Yeah, well, they've been trying all weekend, actually. I mean, it's not even to say that the blood wasn't dry. The blood hadn't even been spilt yet by the time that UKIP spokespeople were online saying this is all to do with freedom of movement, this is all to do with open borders. They seized on this opportunity absolutely instantly and have very cynically been trying to drive it home to further their political agenda. So, of course, And that's also the case, by the way, in France. I have to say the National Front are expected to do very well off the back of this. And again, that can only be said that it is quite well organized by ISIS, because they know that this is precisely the reaction they will get.
But why not tighten the borders? Why not?
Well, so, for instance, for the refugee flow, I mean, we have done anything we can to try and stop refugees coming. Britain even cancelled its search and rescue operations, specifically because it said it wanted to take away the incentive for refugees to get on boats. But they get on the boats anyway. And the reason they get on the boats is because they are suffering every day the kind of violence that we have just seen in Paris. So when we ask ourselves, what would get someone to put their own child on a rickety boat across the Mediterranean? Well, what happened in Paris? That is why they do it. So the refugee flow will come anyway because of the violence in Syria and Iraq. Our question is, what is the most practical way of security screening the people who are anyway going to come so that they pose the least threat to us?
Jim?
The worst thing to do is to say what your other caller is saying and to say, well, actually, we need to close our borders to them because they won't stop coming. We will just simply lose control of the situation.
Go on, Jim.
Well, I think it may turn out that events speak for themselves. If it turns out that the Syrian passport is in fact a genuine link to this terror, then I think that your contributor has a lot of explaining to do, because it's fundamental common sense that if you throw open your borders and you have evil conniving terrorists like ISIS, of course they're going to see the opportunities to exploit that, and of course they are going to exploit it. And to smuggle in with those people, with the genuine refugees, those who are coming for all the evil purposes that are manifesting.
Even if it does turn out, Jim, that this was a terrorist who was masquerading as a refugee, do you punish the vast majority of decent refugees because one or two terrorists might get through?
Do you risk the security of Europe by simply having an open civ-like border through which all and sundry, including wicked terrorists, can come? I don't think you do. I think you have to put the security of the people of Europe first, and the security of the people of Europe requires you to have properly controlled borders. And now we're finding within Europe a campaign that the Schengen agreement, which of course within mainland Europe secures open borders. Some of the countries like Poland, etc., are disengaging and saying we're going to have border controls.
But what's your solution? You send all refugees back, do you?
There is no easy solution, but we certainly start by plugging the gaps that we have self-inflicted on ourselves by throwing open our southern European borders and indeed some of our eastern borders to make sure that all rational, reasonable steps are taken that can be taken to stop the flow of those that includes the terrorist-inclined people who manifest their terror in these horrible ways.
Henry Riley, your new colleague, he's now TUV councillor, as you know. Before he said on the Nolan TV show, it was September, that the UK should only take Christian refugees from Syria. Is that TUV policy?
Well, it's not TV policy as such, but I think the point he was making, and the point I understand, is that it brought into Europe within the Muslim community, well, not all of them, but some of them, patently, from their utterances, are those who never will wish to assimilate into European culture and civilization, whose purpose is to overthrow that culture and civilization. And that's some of what we saw at the weekend, sadly. So I think, you know, we close our eyes to reality if we don't recognise that within those who call themselves jihadists, it is their raison d'etre to overthrow and to destroy the very civilisation and culture of Europe. And I think that people need to waken up to that.
Here's Matt this morning. Morning, Matt.
Morning.
Go ahead.
Jim Allister was saying about the refugee routes, that the ISIS will be using these. But sure, they'll use many different forms to get into countries to carry out attacks. So he's full of nonsense with just blaming refugees.
Matt, thank you.
We just make it easier by throwing our borders open, and anyone who wants to piggyback on refugees, they're very welcome, even if they're jihadists or not. I don't think so.
Alex in Lisburn. Morning, Alex.
Morning. I'd like to know what's meant by the term closing borders. I think certain, some politicians are taking advantage of the situation. I mean, in 9/11, it wasn't America didn't have an immigrant crisis that led to 9/11. I think what we have is we have a bunch of people with a line of thought that thinks that I feel quite justified in attacking innocent people, and it's directed from the safety of countries. And the only real way to do it is either accept a level of risk, accept a level of loss, or else go after them. I think that's the only choice we have.
Let's speak to Ken Livingstone, who was the Mayor of London at the time of the 7/7 bombings in 2005. Morning to you, Ken.
Hello there.
Good morning, good morning. And the journalist and commentator, Julia Hartley-Brewer, is with us. Morning, Julia.
Good morning.
How do we react to this, Ken? Do we up the ante in terms of military action now?
Well, there's a simple fact that you never win a war by bombing. If you want to defeat ISIS, it's going to need ground troops. Our problem is that America and Britain are completely discredited in the Arab world after Afghanistan and Iraq and Libya. And so if we're to tackle this, it's got to be a wider coalition. You've got to go through the United Nations, got to get China and Brazil on board, as well as Russia. So it's seen not as just us looking after Western interests and trying to control the oil flows and things like that, but it's seen as a worldwide response to say we're not going to have this completely distorted, perverted brand of Islam taking away our rights and our lives.
But you don't think that military action, an escalation in military action is the way to go here?
Oh, no, I think...
Fight fire with fire?
But you don't. You see, how many more angry young men turned to terrorism after they saw the bombing of that hospital by the Americans? An accident. But this is the problem with bombing. It doesn't win your war. If you look at London during the Second World War, often we're having 500 Londoners a night killed by Nazi bombing. It didn't sap our will. It didn't lead us to surrender. It just made us more angry, and this is the problem. Aerial bombing and drone attacks have too many mistakes, too many innocent civilians. If you want to defeat this form of terrorism, it requires ground troops moving in and defeating them.
But they're not going to be defeated with hashtags and people praying for Paris, are they?
No. They can be if you want to defeat this strand of terrorism, you've got to have a coalition of forces organised by the United Nations going in and defeating them, having a sort of global authority. It can't just be left to Britain and France and America and to screw up again.
Julia?
I'm genuinely sitting here utterly perplexed at the idea that that going to war doesn't solve these problems. There is actually only one way to defeat violence, and it is with greater violence. And the history of mankind is the history of violence being used to end violence. That's how we won the First World War, it's how we won the Second World War, it's how we got the Falklands back, it's how we defeated people in Bosnia and Kosovo, it's how we have won every single conflict. So what? You have to use violence against people who will use violence. There is no negotiated compromise. We can't say, tell you what, you can kill this number of Yazidi people, or you can rape this number of 9-year-old girls who you regard as infidels. That's okay, as long as you don't do this one, because we'll have a compromise. But there is no compromise with people whose intent is to kill us, to kill anyone who comes in their way, and to basically establish their rules, their religion, their culture over us. We're not going to allow that to happen. There are only two options. We can either stand around and light up our public buildings in the tricolour and have candlelit vigils and all say we stand together, or we can fight. And that's what's actually going to ultimately happen, because when enough people are killed on the streets of Paris or in London or any other place in Europe, in the Western world, people will eventually say, enough is enough, and we will take on these people. It's a matter of time, not a matter of if. It's a when we will actually finally get to grips with the fact we are going to have to go to a proper war, not just drop a few bombs here and there.
Fighting talk, Ken Livingstone, from Julia.
Agreeing with me. I mean, it can't be done just by a few more drone strikes, a few more bombs. If you want to defeat this terrorism, you've got to have ground troops. You've got to have hundreds of thousands of them. And that means a wider coalition than just, Britain and America and France again, because that just, look, we invaded Iraq and Afghanistan on the day that Blair took that decision. Our security services told him, if you do this, it will make us a target for terrorism. Here we are, I mean, nearly 15 years on after 9/11, and we're still facing this. But every time we've invaded another country, it's been a recruiting, the best recruiting agent.
Look, hold on a minute. The worst thing that's happened in recent years in terms of the threat to people in the Middle East and to Westerners has been the rise of ISIS. And that has happened pretty much as a result of our failure to intervene militarily in Syria and save the many millions of people there who've been displaced and the 250,000 people who've been killed. It's actually a failure to use force with actual real determination and might by the West that has caused this problem in the first place.
No, what caused the problem was that we urged people to overthrow Assad, not realising that the major force working against Assad was ISIS. I mean, it's not like you can have Assad or a nice group of social democrats who want to run elections and legalise homosexuality. There isn't anyone like that in Syria. You've got a pretty grim choice between Assad's regime, which we tried to overthrow. All it did was help make the space for ISIS to grow.
So do you think...
Are you saying, Ken, we should be in an
alliance with Assad? Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm saying we shouldn't have tried to overthrow Assad. We had Cameron coming along saying, oh, let's overthrow Gaddafi. What's happened? I mean, Libya's in a worse situation now. When we overthrew Saddam Hussein, under Saddam Hussein, a woman could walk down the streets of any city in Iraq in a miniskirt, because he kept a complete grip on religious fundamentalism, as Gaddafi did. We, in overthrowing those dictators, opened the way to something even worse. We haven't had lovely little democracies in Iraq and Libya. What we've had is a breeding ground for terrorism.
But that's a failure of policies as a result, resulting from the war, as opposed to the decision to go to war. And there was no decision to topple Gaddafi. That was the forces, the French and British forces, only went to protect, providing air protection for people, given that Gaddafi was going to go and massacre people in Benghazi. There was no choice for a civilised nation to not go in to act to save those people. The reality is, Ken, you're perfectly happy for dictators to stay in power, perfectly happy for Fidel Castro for many years to stay in power. You've got a long history of supporting non-democratic autocrats and despots in many countries. Now, that's up to you. Personally, I'm a big fan of democracy, and I think it was quite right of us to take the risk, yes, it was a big risk, to support people who were on the streets peacefully marching in Syria, asking to have a democratic say in their country. I think that was worth supporting. I'm sorry if you think that's naive, but it was.
If you like democracy, then why is it that most of our allies around the world have been brutal dictators? The main funder of Osama bin Laden was the Saudis. I mean, we are still sucking up to the Saudis, although they've been funding the intolerant form of Islam, spreading it around the world for the last 60 years. We're quite prepared to work with dictators as long as they're on our side. That's the history of British government, Labour and Tory.
I'm with you all the way on that. There's no way there'll be flags flown at half-mast for a Saudi king dying if I was in charge. We do agree on that. However, look, we are where we are. Where we are is Syria's in chaos, Iraq's in chaos. Most of the Middle East is now in chaos. We are in a situation where an organisation, a death cult, has effectively declared war on our culture. It is absolutely inconceivable to me that we just sit back and go, well, not much we can do, eh? We only made it worse last time. We seem content for our closest allies in France to be slaughtered on their streets and do nothing. We're content for British people on a beach holiday in Tunisia to be slaughtered and do nothing. When you do nothing, when people slaughter your countrymen and your allies' countrymen, and you do nothing, you are saying, we won't act next time either. We will eventually have to act, because you do not stop people with guns by standing together and singing Kumbaya. You get a bigger gun and a bigger bomb and you take them out.
And why have we got these attacks now? It's because of our earlier interventions in the Middle East. We've had 100 years of interfering. No, let someone else have a word. Just be quiet.
Hold on, Julia. Go on, Ken.
Just be quiet, Julia. I mean, the simple fact is, for 100 years, we've been intervening in the Middle East. It's always been a disaster. And we've got these terrorist attacks because of the invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq. Who was funding all that? The Saudis, who are the principal ally of America in the Middle East. Who was actually going along and encouraging groups like the Mujahideen in Afghanistan? They were being given arms by the United States of America, starting with Jimmy Carter.
We're going to have to leave it there because the news is coming up. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Julia.